Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 193, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode193. And today, we're talking about Q and A. Ah, I'm a rhymer. And we all know what that means. Questions and answers. Q&A. We are living in an age of communication, an age of technology, an age where your students can actually talk to the playwright of their next play. You know, so long as it's not Shakespeare or some other dead playwright, you know. Although, wouldn't that be awesome? Can you imagine you can have your time machine and you could, like, talk to Shakespeare? I digress. Okay. But you could talk to the playwright of your next play through Skype. You could do a Google Hangout with a professional actor. You could talk to a set designer on Facebook Live. It is all possible. And it's something that I do quite a lot of. I do a lot of Skype Q&As, virtual Q&As with students who are putting up one of my plays. Sometimes I talk to student directors. Sometimes I talk to after-school programs. Sometimes it's classes. I've talked to high schools. I've talked to middle schools. And on paper, I think that these events are kind of fabulous. I would do them and will do them for anyone doing one of my plays. I love hearing what students think. I love hearing what they think about the characters, about what's happening. I have one play called Look Me in the Eye, and students always want to know how to pronounce the names in the play. It takes place in the future, so the names are a little bit off kilter, and they want to know if they've got the background right for the names and how they're pronounced and if they're on the right track. And, you know, I can answer those questions. I can help their process. But sometimes, you know, what can happen is I talk to a teacher ahead of time, and the teacher talks about how excited the students are to talk to me and how they want to talk to me, and they have all kinds of questions and they can't wait. And the day comes and the Skype is all set up, and I'm there, and they're there, and there's maybe one or two questions, and then silence. And I get it. I know. It's weird. It's weird to do this online. It's weird to do it, you know, over the computer instead of in person. And sometimes, you know, and this happens to me all the time, you have this amazing questions, a series of amazing questions, and then in the moment, it just completely escapes your head. I get it. So the question is, for this Q&A questions, how do you run a Q&A session that is valuable for your students and also gets the most out of your guest? So I did a great Q&A with a group of middle school students in Ireland, no less. It was pretty awesome. I just happened to be there on a trip, and I get notices of who's doing my plays, and it was all serendipitous. I'm like, hey, this school in Ireland is doing my show, and hey, we're going to be near their area. And the teacher was like, you know, all on board. And so I got to go to the school and see scenes from the show. And then we did this massive Q&A, and they grilled me on everything. I'm going to put a picture up in the show notes of the question map they created before I got there. These guys, they were prepared. So we recorded the Q&A, and I'm going to play it after this. But first, I'm going to go over a couple of points from my point of view. How do you run a Q&A that's valuable for your students and gets the most out of your guest? So point number one, have everyone write down three questions beforehand. They can do it in small groups. They can do it individually, but make it part of the process that everyone has to come up with three questions. And then that way, everyone can either ask their questions on the day, or you can get together as a class and figure out which are the overlapping questions, compile a list, you know, come up with a unified list that everyone can follow and everyone has a copy of. And this way, there's no chance that anyone will get brain freeze in the moment. And there's no chance that, you know, someone else will ask your fabulous question. Everyone's got the same list that they're working working off of, and the work is already done so that everyone can sort of just focus on the answers and not on, oh, I have this great question and I don't know what it is anymore. Another reason it's good to do this beforehand is that you can monitor the types of questions that are coming up. You can figure out if there are indeed enough questions. You know, you've asked a professional to take time out of their day to talk to your class. And you want to make sure that you're going to get the most out of the time that you have with them. And if your students are struggling with questions beforehand, you know, maybe you need to address that. Either have a discussion about possible questions, figure out why they're struggling, what's something maybe that they're not keying into, or maybe even rescheduling with your guest, you know. Don't let that moment go to waste. Okay, so that's point number one, write down questions beforehand. Point number two, divide the questions into three categories: the person, the process, the product. So if you're talking to a playwright like me, have students compile questions about me. For example, how long have you been a playwright? The process, how long does it take you to write a play? Where do your ideas come from? And then the product, whatever it is that you're specifically discussing in the moment. So in the case of a play, you know, where did you get the idea for this play? How do you pronounce this character's name? Where did you come up with the character names? And that way, students are thinking on a variety of levels for their questions. And also, if you have students who are crew members or ensemble members and don't feel that they have a part in this process of asking about the product itself, there are lots of questions they can come up with when it comes to the process or the craft, you know, be it acting or writing or set design. And they can ask questions about the person and where they are in their craft. So that's number two, divide questions into categories. Number three, have a designated order when it comes to the day of the Skype or the Hangout or the whatever. It's hard to get a whole class or a whole group in front of a small computer screen. And if you put together an order for who's going to ask a question and then create a designated spot right in front of the computer to ask that question, things will run pretty smoothly. So you should give everybody numbers and you make sure you know who's in front of you and who's after you. And you know that at a certain time, you're going to ask question number 7, for example. You come up to the front, you ask your question, and then it just makes things more than a little bit of a chaotic free-for-all, like, okay, who's got a question? All right, or you come up from the back and ask your question. You know, if you're number 6 and question 5 is going and you're at the back, you know, you got to kind of make your way up to the front. So that's number 3, have a designated order when it comes to the day of the Skype. Number 4. Lastly, monitor your students' engagement level during the Skype or the Facebook Live or whatever. This is especially true if you have middle school students. If they're getting squirrely, it's time to end the session. Again, your guest is taking the time to consider the questions asked of them. They're trying to give the best answer possible. And if it looks like no one is listening, that's not great. So just keep an eye on, are they listening? What's happening? And, you know, you're the one who's sort of in charge on that end. There's not much that the person who is on the other side of the Skype can do. So just to kind of keep an eye on what's happening and if the squirrely behavior is coming out. Okay, so those are my 4 tips for running a Q&A session with a professional artist. Brainstorm your questions ahead of time, create questions in categories, for example, the person, the process, the product, and then monitor student engagement. Okay, now I'm going to take you across the pond to a live Q&A session with middle school students at the North Wicklow Educate Together Secondary School in Bray, Ireland. So just as a little heads up, it is live and we're in a gym-like room. So the sound won't be the best, but it is the best that we can do. And I hope that you enjoy the session.
What was it like doing the play?
It was fun.
Yeah. Yes?
And
yeah.
Stressful.
Why was it stressful?
Well, just the general.
Yeah.
Because we're reading a sensation.
We gave Emer a gray hair.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I did get one.
One gray hair. But that's good. What was the most stressful scene, do you think? Or what was the most stressful part?
The last one.
Brianna. Oh my god, the Brianna scene.
The scene.
Oh.
When we did our live performance.
performance.
Yes.
Shush, we don't talk about that.
Just half of it. And there was this like 5-minute silence whenever someone was supposed to skip their lines.
But it feels like 5 minutes, doesn't it? Though.
Yeah.
All, it takes like three seconds, and then it's like. Did you find your way back, or did you just like?
We did.
Yeah.
What happened was someone like skipped a part and said there a Milo's cue to come on, but Milo never came on. And we're like, rude. But you know, it's fine.
Just Milo's fault.
You're blaming Milo. Don't blame Milo.
And Callum.
Yeah. All right. And which was the scene that you liked the best? Do you think? Which was the scene that you thought?
Boy, definitely.
The boy scenes were amazing.
We were supposed to do that. And someone forgot to go off stage. The club were still gonna be there, but they went off stage.
You should tell them to go back on.
Yeah, but
you know, the part where he walks across and he's
The cologne.
Too much cologne?
Oh, his was amazing. Dude, just do it now. Do it first now.
Yeah, come on, do it first now.
Go on.
Oh, what is that?
Oh,
what? Too much cologne?
Yes. Classic. Well done. Good man.
All right. Questions?
I have questions.
All right. You know what? Let's go with the one. Yes. You have the list and then.
I have the list, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yes, go.
Jonas is different.
Yes.
We all know that. But how did you picture him? Because how did you picture him different?
Well, here's the thing. I think that people. Particularly at this age, and I know for myself, that was one of the things that I remembered from being 12 and 13, is that sometimes you think you're different and there's absolutely nothing wrong with you, right? Because there's difference in how you think everyone looks at you, and then there's other different, right? It's been, I've seen it where it was someone who felt that their weight was too much and they didn't want to get in the shower that way. I've seen it down in the States where he was played by an African American and what that meant to be different. So I've seen it done with all levels of different. And that's why I didn't want to say specifically in the dialogue what exactly made him different so that whoever was playing Jonas could make up his own mind. So what did you make up? What did you decide?
We said trans.
He
was transgender.
Yeah.
That he was
right.
Afraid to.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Mila. Yeah, he's transgender, just so you know. Yeah.
I thought it was just like weird. Skinny and weedy.
It's been done that way too, where he's like a really, really, you know, because sometimes.
Scrawny.
Yeah, because sometimes there's boys who are 13 who are like,
boom.
Oh, and then they're like. But so
I love how all of
Sean
them.
And Dylan.
All right.
Sean versus Dylan.
Yes.
Who do you think you relate to most in the play?
Who do I relate to most? Well, it all depends on the day. Hoodie, I relate to a lot. That whole notion of just wanting to throw your hood up and wanting to hide from everybody. I think that's something that I absolutely relate to. So yes.
Did you base any of the characters of yourself at that age?
No, like there. I think that there's a little bit of me in all of them. There's a lot of me. There's a little bit of me in the clump. There's a little bit of me in the all the squares and the triangle scene and the
doctor.
I'm an octagon. There's even a little bit of me in Jonas. So, but I like to. I make up a lot of stuff. So there's nobody in the play who's like a person from my life or a person that I know. I have a very active imagination, so I like to make up everything, make up everybody.
Who's your favorite character?
Ooh. Who's my favorite character? Trilby.
Or characters.
Trilby. Yes.
Or characters.
Yes, and you played her with sass like that. I haven't seen her done like that before. So that was lovely. That was a real treat. I thought the two of you worked really nicely together. Yes.
What happened to Emily and Emma after their scene?
I think they, well, it all depends if you're an optimist or a pessimist. If you're a pessimist, they were never friends again. If you're an optimist, then they just took up right where they left off and became friends again. Yes.
Who are Flim Flam and Bambi's?
Yeah.
Well?
And what happened
yes.
to them?
Yes.
And what
Who
happened
are
to
they?
Them?
Well, they're like, they're not, it all depends, again, it all depends on your point of view. I think they're not real. I think they're
just part of my imagination.
Well, not the they're not imagination, but they're not human. That's what I mean to say. I don't think they're
human. Oh, no, Jazz and Bailey salt.
So, yes.
Oh, what happens to Brianna?
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah.
I think that again, it depends. It depends on your point of view. If you think good of people, then she changed. If
yeah,
you
I
don't
feel
think,
like I like.
If you don't
like
think
you're
good at people, she moved and went to a whole new school where nobody.
Bye,
knew her.
Amber Ashley. I'm still looking for that snow cone, by the way.
Yes.
Who is Dr. Shane slash Dr. Papadakis slash...
It's Dr. Lou.
Dr. Lou.
He's just a... He's someone who wanders the streets. No.
Fair enough. Sounds like me.
He's somebody who thinks he has... He knows he has the right answer to... what teenagers are going through.
Exactly.
He doesn't.
Is he like 40 years old? Or
yeah.
Is he like
something like that.
Wait, what? So I played he's a man?
Oh. Okay.
No, he's been done. I've seen him done as a woman, so you're fine.
Milo.
Yes.
What happened to Lucas's voice?
Say that again.
What happened to Lucas's voice?
Is that okay?
It gets deeper. It just changes. It's an exaggeration, eh? Like the scenes with the voice and the scene with the triangle or the square. I tried to think of a really theatrical but a really exaggerated, non-real thing that would happen when guys change and guys change their voice. Yes.
What was your favorite scene to write?
I think the Dr. Lou ones were pretty fun because Dr. Lou is such a... Because it's always funner to write for characters who aren't bound by reality. Like, he just says whatever. Like, I just call me Dr. Change. Like, he's just, you know, he's that guy. And then I also really like writing two-hander scenes where characters say what they really mean because I think that's something we don't do in life. You know, if your best friend came and told you that... they didn't want to be your friend anymore. You know, I don't know how many people would stand up the way that Trilby does and gives and says it so eloquently. Like she says everything I've ever wanted to say to an idiot girl who came up to me and said, I don't want to be your friend anymore. I never would have said that, you know? So I like giving voice to characters who don't have voices. Yeah.
Did mom ever buy Jeremy his shoes?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Sorry, only I have them.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, I have them.
Shut up.
What happened with Hoodie? Did Hoodie make friends?
Yes.
With
Hoodie? That's the point. That's what I hope that you get from the end, is that there was a change. And we don't see the change. We just see the possibility of change.
Doctor Change.
Yeah, Doctor Change.
Well, some of us felt that... all the people in the play who ended up going to the cinema should all end up being.
Yeah. So, you know, like, there's Neve,
they all
Tina.
Met. They all met in the movies, right?
And became besties.
What did they go see, though?
I'm gone.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, okay. Beauty and the Beast, Spider-Man, you know, whatever one.
Yeah, the Beauty and Spider-Man.
Movies, Hoodie.
At the same time.
Yeah. Have you ever went to a Hoodie?
What?
Have you ever thought of writing, like,
not a prequel.
A sequel where they're all adults.
Where they're in college.
Oh!
Are you actually?
No, I've never. It's really funny because I write a lot of plays like this where there is a theme and then there are very short scenes, and I've never taken characters from one play and thought about them other than outside of a different life. So there's two other plays that Hody's in a trilogy of plays, but it's the same thing. It's just a play on a theme, and we don't meet the character. We don't meet these characters ever again.
Apart from Dr. Change.
Lou.
No.
It's like a window, eh? Like you just sort of see a little window into their life, and then it's gone.
I prefer Papadakis as well. If you didn't want to talk, call me Dr. Change. Appreciate that.
Yes.
What was your inspiration for the play?
I go into schools a lot. Like, so when I'm working on a new play, I always take it into a school and sort of give it to them and get so guys your age to read it to make sure that I'm on the right track, since it's been a long, long, long time since I was in, since I was 12. And I was in one school and there was a huge deal being made about hoodies being worn with the hood up and hats in school. And as an outsider, I didn't get it. And I talked to, we had a long discussion with students and with the teachers about what that actually means and why they're not allowed that. But that was the inspiration for me, is that what if there was a character who wanted to wear their hood up for a very good reason and was being told no. And just about that, so that was the base. And then I just started thinking about other things that happen, like changes that happened and friendships that go awry and just different relationships. And I've always, and then after that, I really was thinking about The Clump, because it's all about being theatrical. So how do I take something where people are thinking and turn it into something that I can show? Yes.
How do you have a TV show?
Oh, I wish. Yeah.
What happened to the girl that turned into an octagon?
She turned into an octagon.
I think that she turned into an octagon for a very brief moment and then became just a normal teenage girl.
What happened to the guy that turned into a square?
Same thing. Although he seems a little more he seems a little more anxiety written about it. So the girl turned into the octagon probably wasn't affected. The guy who turned into a square, it probably affected him a little bit.
Sorry, mate.
Yes.
We had a good costume for him.
I know, I heard. But yeah. That's all right.
Did Nikki actually get grounded for life?
Did I get grounded for life? Please don't tell me I did. Thank you.
No.
I feel really bad.
Parents say that.
Yes.
And also, wait.
Did you lose it?
I lost it.
Wait, where'd it go? Oh, wait, yeah. Did Voy ever find the right amount of cologne?
Ooh.
To wear?
Did he?
That is a great question. I'm going to say that no. He was always overdoing it or underdoing it. And then eventually someone came along and sat him down and kind of was like, maybe just use soap. Just
clean yourself.
Just
have
clean.
A
be clean and maybe not so much the... hovering up of the odors.
We were thinking of adding. Well, Emer was involved in this.
We thought of it while we were planning the questions.
Yeah, for Ronan to come back in and be like, "Hey, right amount of cologne."
Just enough cologne, like at the very end, like when the clump had gone off, we should have done.
Yeah.
Did the top actually make Emily look lumpy? Emma look lumpy.
Who played Emily?
I was Emily.
What do you think?
I think that Emily was just looking for an excuse to insult Emma.
I agree.
Emily was just jealous of your shoes, honestly.
Yes, you know how sometimes people say things that aren't true because
they're jealous.
They want whatever, yeah.
Did she actually have ugly shoes then?
What do you think?
Yeah, I think she's ugly.
Alright.
Especially
the shoes
that I
picked out for you.
Yeah, they were
shoes.
Were
we had the same top on because I have like three of these, so I gave one to right. And yeah. Then we had the same tops for Emmy and Emma.
Very good.
You know, Stacey and Paige.
Yes.
What was actually their plan?
Yeah.
Like, was it just be like, hey, you can be popular? Or was it like
I think their plan was to get rid of everything and anything that wouldn't make them popular.
Daleks.
Trilby number one. And I think that Charlotte would, I think she was headed down that road anyway. Just she seemed like that kind of character that she would have left Trilby behind and just happened to in gym start talking to two other girls who were fast tracking that.
And did they ever become friends again?
No.
Never.
Yep.
Did Amber and Ashley like stay with Brianna? Like, did they like continue being her friend?
No.
Servant.
Servant. That's not fair. I want my Snoko.
You wore
get
the
your own Snoko.
Your fault.
Fight.
Yeah.
Wait. Actually,
we tricked you into wearing.
How did Flim Flam and Bamboozle actually know like about like the Spirit Assembly and that she was wearing that top and that she? Was
did they stalk me?
They're not human.
That's all there was.
Oh,
we're
no.
Servants of Lucifer.
Yeah,
right.
You're my
Amber.
Ew.
That's weird.
Now we're your Amber and Ashley.
Ew. Oh, excuse me.
Oh.
Hi.
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 What
is happening? I don't know. All right.
No.
Oh. What do we think? Oh, yeah, more. Yes.
Sorry. What happened to Bailey and Jazz?
I think they lived happily ever after. Like, just in
and
terms of
married.
Their, not together, their lives. Their lives worked out great.
Jaylee.
They became
Baz.
Popular. Baz. No, they, but they became happy with them.
They
became happy.
Yeah,
they
went to Jaylee.
So, Jaylee. You know the scene, the comp scene, where one of them is like, I don't get it. And she explains why, how she looks fine at home and then when she's in school, she's not.
Yes.
Does she ever figure that out and become happy with herself at school?
I think you can play both ways. So I think it depends on the person who's playing that part and see how they see themselves. Because there's lots of people who take that feeling their whole lives. And then there's other people who it's only a little while that they feel that way. And then they start to see that it's different, that that who you are inside is more is what makes you the good person and not what you see in the mirror. Yes.
After Tina went to the Body Factory, did she look perfect?
Nope.
How did she get
back? Sorry, Ollie.
You will never be perfect.
Did Niamh stay out of the clump?
Yes.
Go on, Niamh.
Yeah, Niamh. Yes, Niamh.
Yes. Did she went to the movies, yes.
Did the clump disband?
Oh, did, never. That's the sad part about the clump, is that there's always new people who want to go into the clump.
Did more people leave the clump?
Yes. But that's the sad part, is that people will always be ready to leave the clump, just as there are people who are need the clump.
Who's your least favorite character?
Ooh. Well, I don't put them in if they're my least favorite. Brianna's not my happy.
Natasha. Not my happy. Oh,
but I bet you played her really well.
Oh, I was amazing.
I'll bet you were. I can tell 100% that you were awesome as that part. So, yes, sir.
Yeah. Who was your least favorite to write?
Ooh.
Who was my least favorite?
They don't usually end up in the play if they're, I don't like writing them. They usually get kicked out.
Was scenes so, the most challenging to write?
The clumps are always challenging because I was trying different things, like with the message, and this. I know that that's what people say. That
they were.
I'm gonna say those were the most challenging to write. The clump scenes were the most challenging. Yes.
Were any characters actually written and then you decided no, and you kicked them out?
I'm gonna say yes because it's been a long time since I've written it. And what I usually do is I do whatever the first draft is. I don't say no to anything. So that means that scenes go in and characters go in, and I just write as much as I possibly can so that when I'm ready to do the next draft, then it's like, okay, well, how does this all fit together? And sometimes that's what happens, is that when I'm fitting it all together, scenes don't quite work. So like if I have a scene A and a scene B, and it's like, oh, scene B really fits in here. Scene A is kind of saying the same thing as scene B, and scene B is better. So there's sometimes that is what happens, and that's when characters get kicked out. Yes.
How long did it take to write?
It took, I'm going to say that it probably took me a month to write it. And then I took it to three different schools because I thought the clump was hard. I wanted to see students work on it. And then I took the draft back and then probably a couple more months. Probably from beginning to end, probably took about 3 to 4 months. Yes.
What happens to Jones? Does he like become a hypocrite? Use Jonas? Does he come like?
Does Jonas become a hypocrite? It depends on how you see the character. Because I can see him going both ways. I could see him crumbling. I could see him just going with the status quo, and then I could also see him fighting up for himself. Yeah, depends how you see him. How do you see him? Is he a fighter or is he a crumbler?
He's gonna crumble.
Yeah, is he? All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Apple crumble. I want apple crumble.
Oh! Oh, oh.
I don't like it, so it's fine.
Same. Chicken nuggets.
Rhubarb crumble.
I don't like crumble.
Oh, yes.
Fine.
What's your favorite version of the play that you've seen?
Ah,
be careful with what you say.
Yes.
My favorite. Of course, this is my favorite
exactly,
version
thank
of the play
you.
That I've
she
seen.
Did.
So don't say this
to everyone.
And I haven't even seen the whole thing. Just think.
Do
I
see the whole thing?
Not
really. No, stop.
Oh, wait, no, that was the main part.
Yeah, please don't show that one.
Yeah.
What is your favorite place or musical?
My favorite play and my favorite musical?
Uh-huh.
Great. Okay, so my favorite play is a playbook called by Thornton Wilder called Our Town, which is a little bit, it's realistic, but it's also a little bit surreal, like there's no real set. The way that I think about sets are really influenced by Our Town. My favorite musical, I really like Stephen Sondheim.
Have you listened to Hamilton?
I have listened to Hamilton.
Do you like it?
I like Hamilton?
Be careful.
Of course I like Hamilton.
Yeah.
There's a musical called Merrily We Roll Along, which is by Stephen Sondheim. And currently, I change all the time because I listen to things all the time. So. That's currently my favorite musical. Yes?
How many guys have you read?
Over 60.
Whoa.
Thank you so much, guys. Okay, so before we go, let's do some theater folk news. Any links to today's episode can be found in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode193. And today, it's a play feature, it's a play feature, it's time to feature a play. And this month, over on the Theater Folk blog, we are featuring Christmas plays. Seem weird? Not really. You're not going to be thinking about a Christmas play in December, right? Right! It's going to be months and months ahead of time. So, let's talk about Deck the Stage. Deck the Stage, this is a vignette play, which is a number of short scenes on a theme. So it's awesome for classwork. Everyone gets a scene. Everyone can be working at the same time. And in the play, every scene is based on a Christmas carol in some way. We've got comedy, drama. One of the scenes in the piece called Still as Stone, which is based on the carol In the Deep Midwinter, is one of our most popular two-hander drama scenes. My favorite scene is the one based on the 12 Days of Christmas, in which a teacher goes a little off the rails, shall we say, over her class and their participation in the Christmas assembly, the annual Christmas assembly. And I'm going to read a small sample of the off the railsness. Don't you understand? This is my crowning glory. This is my shining moment. No, of course you don't. You don't understand anything. What would you understand about lost dreams, forgotten hopes, dashed desires? What would you understand about anything? What do you know? Tell me, you rotten pipsqueaks, what do you know? Every year, my class is expected, nay, demanded upon, to present the most original, the most creative spot in the program. In September, Mr. Herbert comes up to me, rubbing his hands in glee. So, Miss Mayermeyer, what are we going to see this year? Students run up to me in the halls, tugging insistently at my sleeves. Is it lasers, Miss Mayermeyer? Are you going to do the confetti cannon again? And the teachers. The covetous, envious, desirous, jealous, jealous teachers. Oh, isn't it interesting how you taught 38-year-olds how to roller skate? How fascinating. They don't understand. They don't understand at all. I can never repeat an idea or a concept. Oh, if I ever dare to repeat something like they do, year after year, with the night before Christmas, and oh, aren't they cute? If I did that, they'd attack me like the pack of wolves I know they are. I have spent an entire year on this. I can't back out now. My whole life is determined by a stupid, stupid pageant. And you are going to do this, Mary Lou. You're going to sing your heart out, and you're going to hold up that toxic waist with pride. You're all going to do it, and you're going to like it too. You're all going to do it, and you're going to like it. Oh, yes, you are. Okay, so that is Deck the Stage, and you can find sample pages at theaterfolk.com, or you can click the link in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode193. Finally, where can you find this podcast? Go to theaterfolk.com/podcast. There are a ton of options. We're on iTunes, Android, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. Again, that is theaterfolk.com/podcast, and that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.